Hey, hi, hello, how's it going? This is the Random Article Podcast, a show in which we investigate the strange collection of cassette tapes and VHS tapes that I found in a forest in Germany. I've got a whole suitcase full of these things, and it's really cluttering up my apartment, this giant pile of strange black plastic. I swear these tapes make noises in the night sometimes, that they sort of jostle or vibrate or skitter across the floor and scare the cat. So there is something really weird going on with these things. But the only way that I feel we can resolve the mystery of these tapes is to play them on this podcast, one by one. So today, we're going to play one of these tapes. I'll grab one at random. So let's see here. We've got, all right, let me grab, okay. All right, here we are. So this one is labeled, it's labeled Martin Cordial. That's Martin with an E. I have no idea what's on this tape. I cannot be held responsible for what you're about to hear, but there's only one way to find out what's on it. So I'll pop in this tape. And let's have a listen.
Shore leave. His coin purse jangled as he strolled down the dock, every penny chiming with possibilities. He had 3 months' pay and just a few nights to spend it before Her Majesty's vessel began the long voyage back home. Bartholomew didn't want to waste a second. On the farm where Barthol grew up, Uncle kept the livestock in a barn all winter to keep them from the cold and the wolves. Barthol hated having to feed the animals and to rake out their muck every frozen morning. But when spring finally came, Uncle would let the animals out to graze. And Thol loved watching them emerge nervously from the shadows, blinking at the light, before racing joyously into the bright new sun. The cows would skip and romp and frolic across the green grass, and Barthol figured that if such fat, ungainly beasts could frolic and dance, then he damn well could too. It had been a long winter on board Her Majesty's vessel, toiling below decks in the engine room. Now he relished every moment under the sun. Though this sun was not the sun he knew. Down here at this strange latitude, the sun was a malign eye in the sky, a bloody orange puncture wound bleeding heat onto earth, making the thick air simmer and sweat. The air weighed on his body like a heavy, humid cloak, slowly shifting in invisible currents, pushing then pulling his thoughts one way then the next like seaweed with the tides. The strange air made some parts of his brain drowse down to sleep, while long-forgotten memories roused from deep, subconscious waters. First Mate Bishop said that this was due to the equator. "The world turns on a dipole," he declared last night in the ship's mess. "The planet has a magnetical sphere with a northern end and a southern one, and the magneticism's tied to our brain's neuroelectrics. That's physics, you see." Barthol had nodded. Bishop claimed to have read more books than he had wrinkles, and the man was all wrinkles. "As men of the continent," Bishop continued, "all our brain's neuroelectrics are aligned to the north end of the axis, and it's through these northern lights that charged space particles enter the hemisphere and tickle at our thinking lobes to keep us ticking." He tapped at his head with a gnarled finger to illustrate, whilst his other hand precariously clutched a cup of rum. "When a man crosses the equator to the southern hemisphere, his whole mind box flips. His magnetochemistry inverts to face the southern pole. Your brain snaps right to it like the needle on a compass. So you've got to learn to think topsy-turvy, boy, or else your head will be scrambled on the other side of the equator. I've seen it happen to many a sailor who weren't prepared, walking on their hands, putting hats on their arses. Bishop shook his head sadly and took another draught from his cup.
You've got to keep your brain limber, got to keep it loosey-goosey so you can think straight in the upside-down hemisphere. It's not too bad for a week or so, but whatever you do, boy, listen, whatever you do, don't miss the ship back home. If you stay beneath the equator for too long, there is no coming back. Your circuits will be permanently rewired, and you'll not know your tits from your testicles ever again. Do you know your tits from your testicles, boy?
Barthol had looked down, stupidly, as if to check.
Yes, Bishop, he said, as the other men laughed.
That's good, Bishop had said. Well, enjoy your shore leave, but make sure you're back here in 3 days.
The Majesty's unloaded its goods into a local warehouse, to be picked up by another ship bound for the Antipodes. As the crew unpacked its endless cargo, Barthol's friend Stump expressed some doubts about Bishop's theory.
Our minds don't run on magnetics or chemicals, he said, grunting as he rolled another barrel of salt across the deck. My ma told me that inside our head, everyone's got a little brain gremlin who looks out through our eyes like windows and pulls levers and buttons to make us move, like the mechanics in your engine room.
Barthol thought on that. But if a little brain gremlin makes us go, what makes the gremlin go? Is there another little gremlin inside him?
Nah, Stump said. The gremlin runs on magnetics, I expect.
Once all the goods were unpacked, Thol and Stump were free to go. Most of the other sailors headed straight for the nearest pub on the docks, an establishment of continental style with an English sign that read, The King's Cup. Painted below was a charming illustration of a jolly monarch squatting over a beer stein whilst drinking from a chamber pot. Barthol frowned.
Is that His Majesty Carlos III? Is that treason?
Stump laughed and shook his head. King Carl is 1,000 miles away, Barty. He's in a whole other hemisphere. He can't see us down here, nor can the church see us neither. That's why this place is so great. That's why I signed on to this ship. For 3 sweet days, we can do as we please, without priest or king to judge us.
Thol's mother always told him that Yah judges, but Yah also protects. This is a godless city, he murmured.
Not godless, no. It's plenty godful, overflowing with the things. This island has more gods per square foot than anywhere in the world. The sailors bring them on the trade routes. Ships carry rice and tea and silver, but they carry Banesha and Old Jow and Charles Ghost, too. The gods are stowaways on the ship, like the rats. And here on the island, in the heat, they breed like rats, too. Mutant gods, crossbred from far-distant strains, mashed and fused together into bastard deities. Hoary northern thunder gods who meditate on lotus leaves. Desert prophets born again with tiger heads and crab claws. They've all got their churches and shrines here, stacked one upon another, preaching 100 different doctrines and commandments.
That sounds like an awful lot of rules, Barthol said uncertainly.
Nah, cause it's just 100 different new ways to sin. He grinned.
How do you even know all of this? Barthol asked. You've never been here before.
Well, no, not personally, he shrugged. But I heard all about it on shore leave in Kavinchko.
Trust me, you'll have a great time. Barthol suddenly felt less certain about the whole excursion. He had looked forward to a cold drink on a hot beach, having an adventure on a strange land to tell his cousins about back home, but Stump's talk of lawless debauchery sounded like a bit much. Then again, Stump's stories had a consistent record of being utterly untrue. After the shore leave in Kavinchko, he had claimed to have laid with 3 women in one night, but none of their shipmates could corroborate the story. In fact, First Mate Bishop claimed that Stump had simply drank too much and was later found asleep in a barrel of pickled hams. Bishop conceded, though, that there may have been 3 hams. Usually, the truth lay somewhere in between Stump's wild exaggerations and Barthol's low expectations, which was, he supposed, the reason why they were friends. "Okay, fine, let's find a place to eat, but first I need a shower." They were both sweaty from laboring in the heat. "I'll do you one better," Stump said, draping his sweaty arm across Barthol's shoulders. "The island is famous for its traditional bathhouses. They've got natural hot springs here, minerals with special properties to cure disease and heal your mind." "You believe that a bath can do that?" Barthol asked. Stump shrugged. "I believe there'll be local women there, eager to meet handsome young sailors such as ourselves. And of course, there's no clothes allowed in the bathhouse." Stump grinned and led Thol into the city as the strange sun simmered above. The bathhouse was a strange sight. On a street of humble wooden taverns and workshops, the bathhouse had an elaborate stone facade with archways covered in glittering glass mosaics and traced with swirling curves of foreign script. While most of the street had electricity, the bathhouse was lit from within by a fiery orange glow. This lighting, plus the faint sulfuric smell, struck Barthol as some ominous portal to Hades. Inside, however, the entrance hall was inviting, with white and blue tiles decorated with lush green climbing plants and running water features. A woman in an orderly black dress took 10 shillings for entry. She handed Thol and Stump each a towel and an odd green fruit. The fruit was round and resembled a banana, but most of the fruit's flesh had been removed, leaving a hollow space within the tough skin. Thol thanked her, but was puzzled at the fruit. "This is to eat after the bath?" he asked. The woman laughed. "No, it's not for eating. This is a sacred guava to purify the body. In the bath, you must go naked, but you wear the guava." Thol nodded. He was willing to accept curious local customs. "I wear the guava on my head?" "No," the woman giggled. She had clearly had this same conversation with other sailors. No, you don't wear it on your head." When Thol and Stump stepped out of the change room, they were naked, but each wore a guava fruit on their genitals. Barthol had found it difficult to stuff his parts inside the guava skin, but once it was on, he had to admit it was comfortable. It gave a fresh, tingling sensation on his skin, which was disconcerting, yet refreshing. Stump complained that his guava wasn't big enough. "We're going to look ridiculous in front of the local girls," he grumbled. But when they found the baths, they found them occupied almost exclusively by men. Older men, mostly, smoking some fiercely pungent shisha around small circular tables dotted throughout the baths. Many were engaged in passionate conversation, in languages that Barthol couldn't recognize, let alone understand. The shisha joined with the steam off the water to form a ghostly, shimmering fog. "Where are the local women, Stump?" Thol laughed. Stump sighed. Will they refund our shillings if we give our guavas back?
Might as well take a dip while we're here, Thol said, and headed for the water. He felt uncomfortable at being so naked in public, so he kept his towel around his waist until he reached the bath. Stump, however, seemed to have no such qualms, walking with his towel slung over his shoulder. A few of the bathhouse patrons cast startled glances at Stump's body as he approached the bath, for Stump's eponymous stump was visible to all. Above Stump's ass was a nub of flesh some 2 inches long, like a small Frankfurter sausage. The tail stump moved slightly side to side with Stump's walking motion, like a dog or a cat's tail might. Stump paid no heed to the glances as he eased into the water next to Barthol.
It's like they've never seen a stump before, Barthol grinned. They should have given you a second guava.
Let them stare, Stump said defensively, and Barthol realized he shouldn't have teased him. Though Stump projected a careless confidence, he was very sensitive about his stump. One time, Stump had confided in Barthol that he was actually born with a full tail, a long, fleshy, prehensile protrusion. This was as important a part of his body as any other. He claimed it helped him balance, and he could even hold objects with his tail, like a fifth limb. But his father always saw his son's tail as an embarrassing aberration, and one day took his son to a surgeon to have it removed. Despite the child's protests, the tail was severed, leaving Stump only with his stump. Stump claimed that his father still kept the severed tail in a jar somewhere, and Stump's secret ambition was to reclaim it, and perhaps to somehow restore it. Barthol was intrigued by the tale of Stump's tail, but the knight was yet too young to discuss such heavy matters. Stump laughed at the bubbles rising from his guava as the bathwater seeped inside, and Barthol investigated the shisha before him. He suspected that this would be an interesting night.
Okay, so that was side A of the tape. I think we'll leave it there for now, but maybe in the future we can check out side B of Martin Cordial's tape. Or we could check out a Cardinal Timor tape, or an MC Radio Rental, or another Horoscope tape. Let me know in the comments, and chuck us a review on Apple Podcasts if you'd like, as we continue our investigation into these Mystery Forest tapes. So yeah, thank you for listening, and avoid the Black Forest, lest you end up with a suitcase of Eldritch tapes like mine. Cheers.